This is the Quality News Network. In the Senate today, Republicans blocked a $50 billion war funding bill that contained conditions, including a troop withdrawal from Iraq to begin within 30 days. The vote was 53-45, which is 7 votes shy of the 60 needed to move it ahead. Democratic leaders say they will not bring forward another war funding bill until next year. According to the latest statistics, the U.S. Army desertion rate is at its highest since 1980. According to the military, 9 in every 1,000 soldiers were deserters last year. These levels are still lower than the rates during the Vietnam War. A federal appeals court today ruled that a lawsuit challenging the Bush administration's warrantless wiretap program cannot go ahead. The court, in a 3-0 decision, said that the government is protected by state secrets privilege. Deputy Secretary of State John Negroponte arrived in Pakistan today with a strong warning to President General Pervez Musharraf. He urged him to end the emergency rule, which was imposed earlier this month. Also in Pakistan earlier today, President General Musharraf swore in the interim government, which will be in place until the January parliamentary elections. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto's house arrest order was lifted. In Turkey, prosecutors have taken legal steps to ban the main pro-Kurdish political party and even throw out some of its elected members from parliament. The indictment will include charges of separatism. The president of the former Soviet Republic of Georgia lifted the state of emergency today that was imposed after violent clashes in the capital streets. He insisted everything has returned to normal and claimed that Russia had been behind the civil unrest aimed at bringing down his government. A group of international election observers has canceled their mission to Russia because they say Moscow has refused to issue them a visa on time so they can monitor the parliamentary elections next month. Russia's top election official denies the charges. The prime ministers of North and South Korea have come to an agreement on economic projects that will boost North Korea's economy. The package will also contain ways to help ease the military tension between the two countries, such as a new cross-border train service, which will operate for the first time in more than 50 years. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read two of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton. The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s, to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
In Bangladesh, the death toll from the powerful cyclone that hit late Thursday is rising. At least 1,100 people were killed. Several hundred thousand villagers were evacuated. The CDC reports that a new virulent form of the cold virus has killed 10 people. The worst outbreak occurred at an Air Force base in Texas. An Abu Dhabi company will pay $622 million for an 8% stake in chipmaker AMD, or Advanced Micro Devices, which is the second largest computer processor company after Intel. The fifth largest wireless carrier in the U.S., Altel Corp., has been bought out by two private equity groups in a nearly $25 billion deal. CBS has asked a judge to dismiss the lawsuit filed by its former news anchor Dan Rather. The network argued that Rather took too long to file the $70 million defamation suit. Although Starbucks reported its quarterly profit was up, the coffee giant had the first ever drop in traffic in its U.S. stores. Traffic dropped 1%. Gold is trading at $787 even an ounce. Light sweet crude trading at $95.10 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was up 67 points, the NASDAQ up 19, and the S&P 500 was up 8. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Wow, is it the Friday before Thanksgiving week already? Why, yes, yes, it is. The holidays are upon us, and nobody's going to get anything done until about the 8th day of January from here on out. Got a meeting you need to take? This ain't the time to schedule it. This is the unofficial season in which America gets nothing done. And I'm mighty glad. Well, we'll get something done, though. The horn will be here. We never sleep. There's something for you there on the live stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Almost as much programming here on the horn as on any other liberal network, and done all at the at bargain basement prices. So, you know, we're going to be here. Now, what am I going to... It's Friday. Woohoo! You know, I'm going to knock off after the show and go throw a few back and sit at the bar and tell stories with the bartender. No, 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 no. Weekend? I don't need no stinking weekend. Or should I rephrase that? I don't get no stinking weekend. As you could tell from the gap between the end of the news and the beginning of the intro, well, how the on-air production computer is, I don't know. I think Hal's already in a warm bath and contemplating the razor blades. But no, this weekend is going to be dedicated to A, running programming, and B, to loading programs onto HAL 2.0 Beta, the beast machine. HAL 2.0 Beta has run merrily along without being turned off now for coming up on 6 days, and is testing out beautifully, cruising along at something better than... something better than... 6 gigahertz, buzzing along with 4 gigs of RAM. Oh, just cruising, I tell you, cruising. So this weekend, we start loading files. Poor HAL 2.0 Beta is going to have to start carrying the load. So that's what my weekend's going to be about. I don't know about yours, but this is Friday night, and Friday night is, of course, the front porch, an opportunity for you to join in with your fellow horn listeners in a round table, round the porch conversation, and just get a feel for how we're all taking things at the same time. We had a pretty good one last Friday. Hope this one will be as good as well. How about a starting place? Let's start with silly. It's Friday. Now, we didn't get to it because we didn't carry the... we didn't get all the way to the end of the chicken noodle news debate last night. But you all probably by now know that the debate was ended. Debate, please. Oh, my aching back. The debate was ended on a question to Senator Clinton asking her if she preferred diamonds or pearls, right? Well, it turns out that that was a planted question. No kidding. Earlier in the program, John Edwards asked Wolf Blitzer, is that a planted question? Ha, 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 ha. And Blitzer said, yeah, I planted it. Ha, 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 It turns out that short of Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, Wolf Blitzer last night talked more than every other candidate. Which tells you what the debates are about, really, when you get right down to it, doesn't it? So, well, the final question, though, the pearls or diamonds thing, these wrestling matches have risen to the level of pure, unmitigated embarrassment.
French are glad to die for love. They delight in fighting duels. But I prefer a man who lives and gives expensive jewels. A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat. Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Tiffany's, Cartier, Black Star, Ross Gorham. Talk to me, Harry Winston, tell me all about it. There may come a time when a lass needs a lawyer, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a hard-boiled employer thinks you're awful nice, but get that ice or else no dice. He's your guy when stocks are high, but beware when they start to descend. It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. I've heard of affairs that are strictly platonic, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. And I think affairs that you must keep with Sonic are better bets. If little pets get big baguettes, time rolls on and youth is gone, and you can't straighten up when you bend. But stiff back or stiff knees, you stand straight as Tiffany's diamonds. Diamonds. I don't mean rhinestones, but diamonds are a girl's best. Best friend.
That's what that half-assed question was about, wasn't it? Making light of Senator Clinton for her gender. God, it's frustrating. Because, you see, the girl who asked the question, Maria Luisa, let me find the name. Yeah, Maria Luisa is a student at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. She is a finalist for the Truman Scholarship. She's written public policy papers about the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Depository, That was the question she wanted to ask. Instead, CNN had her ask the diamonds or pearls question. Let's see. National policy, import to the Union, Yucca Flats, diamonds or pearls to Senator Clinton. We'll go with the pearls question because we're going to demean women and make it all abundantly clear that, you know, Senator Clinton really has no business in the race. Sheesh. It turns out that Maria Luisa, a darn near 4.0 student, was set upon by her fellow students from UNLV saying, "Well, you make us look real good, Maria. Don't we look like a bunch of damn dummies now? Don't we look like a bunch of vapid, vapor-brained, materialist freaks?" To the point that she had to put something up on, I guess, Facebook or MySpace or My Book or Face Page or whatever, saying that it was not her choice to ask that question, that every single question that came out of the audience last night had been pre-screened, pre-censored by the fine folks at Chicken Noodle News. You want to hear seriously, I'm not kidding, you want to hear the real question Maria Luisa wanted to ask? Here it is. Yucca Mountain, Nevada, is the proposed site for the country's nuclear waste repository. Despite scientific evidence that it is a vulnerable site, the federal government continues to push for the plan to move forward. The evidence relied on is unsound, and the risks involved in transporting high-level radioactive waste across the country are high. What will you, Senator Clinton, do to ensure that the best site is chosen for the storage of spent nuclear reactor fuel? Instead, we got,
"Tell me, Senator Clinton, do you prefer diamonds or pearls?"
Jesus, maybe they could have carted in Carol Channing to ask it. The body politic, it may not be dead, but I tell you what, it certainly is coughing up blood on the porch. And then, you've got a very good idea about how I feel particularly about Senator Clinton's candidacy. I am not a Senator Clinton supporter. I don't care for her answers. I don't care for her positions. You know, her clear answer that national security is more important than human rights last night. Now, see, that one crawls all over me. Because the answer, it was a false dichotomy presented by Wolf Blitzer, and it was just BS. The two are not necessarily mutually exclusive. We can be secure as a nation, unless by national security you mean something else, some sort of fascist national security state, which probably is what he meant. Or you can view it as a function of human rights in the United States or what has always provided our national security. The fact that this nation looks at the rest of the world through a human rights lens, and that we make our decisions based on those observations. But instead we get,
"Hey, would you prefer diamonds or pearls?"
To which Senator Clinton joyfully replied, "Both!" Because Senator Clinton is trapped in this dichotomy of, one, trying to show that she's tough enough to run with the guys, and therefore, you know, we need, therefore does things like voting to call the army of Iran a terrorist organization and open the door for George Bush to attack Iran, and at the same time trying to seem soft and feminine. And Marilyn Monroe-esque, I guess. So what do I find in the New York Times, the Maureen Dowd column from yesterday? What's Bart Kopp call her? Dragon Lady? She hates everybody? I think so. Headline: Should Hillary pretend to be a flight attendant? Oddly enough, the gist of the column is about a study coming out of Columbia University that shows that we're still trapped in the same old tired stereotypes where guys are afraid of really intelligent women, and women look for intelligent guys while guys look for what guys look for. The guy who did the study, an economics professor named Fisman, said, "I guess I'd hoped that they had evolved beyond this. It's like that Sex and the City episode where Miranda went speed dating. When she said she's a lawyer, guys lose interest. Then she tells them she's a flight attendant, and that plays into their deepest fantasies. We found that men did put significantly more weight on their assessment of a partner's beauty when choosing than women did. We also found that women got more dates when they won high marks for looks." And somehow that column turns into something called "Should Hillary pretend to be a flight attendant?" Give us a break, will you, mainstream media? CNN, New York Times, give us a doggone break. This is tiresome, and we're not nearly as dumb as you think we are. We're a hell of a lot smarter than the people who run your organization are, apparently. You know, I'm reminded of that quote. Oh, I had Gary Fowler, maybe? I forget. But his last name's Fowler. He was a writer. And he said, every editor should have a pimp for a brother so he has someone to look up to. Could anything be more true in regard to Wolf Blitzer and corporate management at CNN? They all need a pimp so they've got someone to look up to. Dennis Kucinich, out of last night's debate, got just barely 5 minutes in, as compared to Wolf Blitzer's through the roof, nearly 15 minutes out of the entire time period. The big winners of the time allotment were, of course, Senators Clinton and Obama. But the real winners on substance, the winner on substance was clearly Dennis Kucinich, who, when asked a question, he said something about, you may have seen this already, said something about not having voted for the Patriot Act. You know, I actually voted against the Patriot Act. I got it right the first time. And was asked, well, why did you vote against the Patriot Act? 4 words. See, I don't count so good, especially on a Friday. 4 words. Because I read it. Because I read it. And, of course, the implication being that most didn't. And if you've seen Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9-1-1, you know the truth of that statement. So these are places where we begin this evening. And one other thing, just for a little bit of lighthearted fun. A new transcript has come out of the Nixon tapes. You know, there were just hours and hours and hours, and even now, 30-plus years after Nixon left office, people are still going through those tapes and transcribing them, and they don't necessarily know what's on them. You just got to listen and transcribe and see what pops up. You know, some days Nixon's talking about his hemorrhoids. Other days, like this, he's talking about Ronald Reagan. And it's an exchange between... God, I love it. You know, if a liberal talker on old buggy whip terrestrial radio says something about Ronald Reagan, some right-winger's bound to call in and say, he was a god. Ronald Reagan was a god. He's a saint. That's why we named an aircraft carrier after him. Well... apparently, Richard Nixon didn't feel that way. Here now, for your enjoyment and your edification, the Head On Radio Network player, namely me, because the recording itself hasn't been released, just the transcript, with a recreation of the exchange between Nixon and Henry Kissinger. What's your evaluation of Reagan after meeting him several times now?
Well, I think he's actually, I think he's a pretty decent guy.
Oh, decent, no question, but his brains.
Well, his brains are negligible. He's
really pretty shallow, Henry.
He's shallow. He's got no... he's an actor. He gets a line, he does it very well. He said, hell, people are remembered not for what they do, but for what they can say. Can't you find a few good lines? That's really an actor's approach to foreign policy, to substantive...
I've said a lot of things, good things, too, you know damn well, Henry.
Well, that, too.
Can you think through, Henry? Can you think, though, that Reagan, with certain forces running in the direction, could be sitting right here?
Inconceivable.
Back to Reagan, though, Henry. It shows you how a man of limited mental capacity simply doesn't know what the Christ is going on in the foreign area. He's got to know that on defense, doesn't he know that these battles we fight and fight and fight? God damn it, Henry, we've been at it.
And I told him, he said, why don't you fire the bureaucracy? I said, because there are only so many battles we can fight. We take on the bureaucracy now, they are going to leak us to death. Name me one thing that we have done that the bureaucracy made us do.
Well, the bureaucracy has had nothing to do with anything, Henry.
No, no. They've made our lives harder. They've driven us crazy. But that doesn't affect him. Ha, ha.
Aha, aha, aha. Richard Nixon thought George H.W. Bush was an imbecile, thought George H.W. Bush's son was a certifiable moron, thought Ronald Reagan was a simpleton. You know, this Nixon guy's turning out to be pretty doggone perceptive. But then, of course, there's always... there's always Kissinger, who, even though he'd sat there with Nixon, said,
they've driven us crazy, but that doesn't affect him. No, you know, that's just a joke, because, you know, he is already crazy. Ha ha, I'll be here all the week. I have just flown in from Hamburg, and boy, are my arms tired. You know, from the flapping. Ha ha, ha ha.
Lord. So, you know, that's where we begin this evening. Richard Nixon, perceptive political prophet, Chicken Noodle News, dumbing down and insulting women all over America. Putting a knife in the pearl and diamond market, apparently. And it's Front Porch Friday. And being Front Porch Friday, well, that means you. It's hard to have a Front Porch Friday without three or four callers making the happy little lights blink. So I'm hoping you'll join in. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Yoo-hoo.
Hello.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. It's the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience
and compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark CFV.org for free loan open caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Okay. We're back. You know that because it's a song. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday night. It is the front porch. Before we walk out onto the front porch and grab the jug with the corn cob stopper in it and try and make sure we don't rock back on the cat's tail, a quick reminder for you. Make sure, you know, we've got some cool stuff happening on the weekend lineup here on the horn. Make sure that you check out Night Sounds tomorrow night, Saturday night, beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, please. We've got Billy Shears has some great new releases by a lot of today's most popular recording artists, as well as the Night Sounds segment on the hits of 1986. Oh boy, time traveling for me. A segment on One Hit Wonders and a Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. And a new segment, by the way. A new segment brought to you by none other than the Horn's own John Fox, host of Foxed Up. He's got a new segment that's going to be appearing regularly in Night Sounds called Tear Down the Walls. And this is a you-don't-want-to-miss-it sort of a segment. I've already heard it, so, you know, I can promise you that. Also, Billy reminds me that we're going to have some special request dedications. Whole lot more, too. And for song requests, you can email Billy Shears. And for dedications, email. Oh, it's a tough Friday, I'm telling you. For dedications, email Erica Richards. Okie doke. So I'm going to be there. You be there. It'll be time well spent kicking back on a Saturday evening, early or late, depending on where you are on this sweet little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Let's go to the phones. Let's get the front porch rocking. Let's see. Sarge is with us, and Susan is with us, and Kate is with us. Hey, welcome to the front porch.
Well, hey, Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Sarge. How about you?
Well, I tell you what, you got it right on about that Billy Shears show. That is some kind of show. I won't be able to listen this week because I'm not going to be around the computer, but folks, it is well worth the time. It's great to go in the chat room and talk with everybody. It's awesome. It really is. But what I wanted to call about the debate last night, you know, one thing that's really interesting is who sponsored it.
Oh, yeah.
The coal industry.
Yep.
And again, they want to talk about their clean coal. Well, when they show it to me, I'll support it. But as we know, there is no such thing.
Clean coal is an oxymoron. Without a doubt.
Obama supports that crap, and that's, we need...
Well, one day he does, and the next day he doesn't. It's kind of hard to pin him down. He's been against it, and he's been for it, and, but...
Yeah, and what's going on with the mountaintop removal, or mountain range removal, as you call it, is deplorable, and this is a travesty, and instead of worrying about whether Hillary likes pearls or diamonds, I'd rather ask her, would you prefer clean energy are more of the same dependence on non-renewable resources.
Yeah, fossil fuel.
That's a far better question.
Well, it's a great start for the front porch this evening, Sarge. Kate, Susan, chime in.
Well, I have an idea of something you can do. In fact, it just popped into my head while I was shopping. Most supermarkets, you go in there and they've got these awful plastic bags you put your produce in.
Sure.
I corralled the produce manager in my supermarket and said, hey, you need to get rid of these because, look at the price of oil. And if you want to consider a nice green alternative.
Well, you know, out here.
A canvas bag, Susan?
Well, No, that's for taking groceries home, but for bagging your produce in the produce department.
Mm-hmm.
I told them to check into a Canadian importer who undoubtedly makes paper bags made out of hemp.
Oh, that, yeah.
Ooh, all right.
Because once it's made into a paper bag, it can come into the country.
I'll be darned.
Well, you know, out here in Phoenix, we have canvas bags that you get from the grocery store, and you use them, take them back, and reuse them. Made of hemp, well, that would be awesome.
Yeah, well, we use the canvas bags to bring our groceries home. But whenever you go into the produce department, you get X number of potatoes, supposedly put them in this plastic bag, you know, and so I won't use them. They've got paper bags for the mushrooms, so I go over and steal the mushroom bags.
Bob, one thing I'd like to say before I hang up here, we at KPHX have a Mississippi holiday mission. I'd like to invite all of your listeners to feel free to join in. All you have to do is go to Home Depot, get a Home Depot gift certificate, send in your name and stuff, and all the money raised is going to help GMCSC, the Jackson County Community Services Coalition, to put people back in their homes.
Yeah,
all
because those gifts,
tax deductible.
Those gift certificates will go directly to Jim Yancey, won't they?
That's right. You send them to the station. We will mail them on to Jim with the information so you can get your tax deduction. And Home Depot has agreed to match up to $3,000 on this. So if we raise $3,000, there'll be $6,000, and Jim can go on a Christmas shopping spree to help put people back in their homes. And Jim, I found out, has even taken out a second mortgage on his own home to help do this. So it will be well used. And you can find out the address from the KPHX website, but we really would love to get some people out of these formaldehyde-ridden FEMA trailers, and it would be a nice way to do it.
Well, thank you, Sarge. That's a great idea.
All right, and thank you, Bob, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, take care. All right, so, Susan, Kate, you haven't gotten a chance to chime in yet. Sing out.
I just spent several cell phone minutes waiting to hear Sarge to say what I was going to say, but that's okay.
Jim and the...
I was going to mention that to the listeners, and I wanted to say hello to Kevin's mama in Brooklyn. We need her to call in. That will be the day, huh?
That would be cool.
That would be very, very cool. And I think we might have a new listener in Arizona. They are on the same crappy phone line that I was on. They were my neighbors, and I'm trying to encourage him that, you know, you can listen on 27K. It's a little choppy, but you know, please.
we've got a dial-up stream that's 12.
Yeah, that's the one I used. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was awful. It was terrible. But anyway, and their cell phone works better than mine because they were in a different place on the corner, and so they don't have to go out on the porch to get better reception, so whatever. Also, what I was going to call in tonight about before we all got started on the brouhaha about the non-election stuff.
For me, Kate, it's not really non-election stuff. It's more along the lines of I like to think of it in terms of shining a light on the insult to the American intelligence that mm-hmm. that is the mainstream media. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'm sick of the light. Nobody's looking, and everybody. I mean, that's just. I don't want to go there. What I wanted to talk about was I had a. It wasn't as good ideas as Susan's counterinsurgency attempt at getting hemp bags in the grocery store. I love it, girl. That's you go, honey. We should do that all over the country. Was one night Wayne called in about when we were talking about contributions. What do we call it? Fundraising.
Yeah, contributions.
Contributions, and he was so moved by somebody sending, I thought it was a $5 check, that, and the little thing on the little note said, I could do without popcorn for 1 week. And I just thought that was so moving, and I thought it was fun, and evidently Wayne was just, it was heartrending to him. But what I thought was, we could, if we would all send in, between now and the end of the month, send in whatever little bit we have and put a note on it that says, well, I didn't do three trips to the grocery store, and I figure at 27 miles to the gallon, I saved this much in gas, and so here's that much in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And put a note on, like, what we saved, how we got that little bit of money, whether it's $3 or 5 or 10 or 50 or whatever, and then have Wayne read them on the air.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know, just and pick out the pick out his favorite ones, or pick out all of them or something, and just see who can come up with the best ones. And they can be anonymous. I mean, I certainly would want mine to be, but just
yeah, but you've already told us how you came to your calculation, so that's kind of a dead giveaway, Kate.
Well, okay, never mind. Then I won't send anything. Never mind.
No. No, I just wanted to make it clear that you'd already shot your own anonymity, okay?
Okay, yeah, well, anyway. But I just thought if we all just sent in a little bit, just take some grains of rice out of your bowl this week and get it in the mail to the Eisenhower address in Beckley, and let Wayne read them on the air and see who we see how many, see if we can top each other about what did we save. I mean, we don't have to say how much the contribution was, but that would be cool, too. You know, if I figured out I saved, oh, I don't know, $14 in gas, I'd add a buck to it and send a $15 check, you know? So,
yeah.
Whatever. So, I don't know. I just thought I'd throw that out to the audience around the world. Hey to Robert in Japan. Hey, all you iPodders. what's his name in Hollywood?
Oh, Jesse. And William.
Jesse, yeah, yeah.
And William.
And William, yeah, I never even heard him. Has he called in before?
I think in the distant past, yeah, but mostly we've been emailing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it sounded like you knew him, and I thought, well, God, I've been here for a few months, and I didn't never hear William, so.
You know why that is? Well, you just said something, and it touches on something, Kate. You said it sounded like you knew him. I feel like I do. Everybody. I mean, sometimes I have to sit back and remember that I've never met you people. Yeah, you know, that we've never sat and face to face looked at each other, because we have become such in incredible integral parts of each other's lives.
Mm-hmm.
That it's hard to imagine. I feel like you know, I don't just feel like I know John Fox. I feel like I grew up with John Fox.
Yeah, for sure. You guys had a rowdy childhood. I was thinking of that earlier this evening. Somebody asked me a question recently. Oh, do you know Bob Kincaid? And I said, well,
kinda, yeah.
yeah, I guess I do. Where'd you meet? And I said, well, I haven't. So it was kind of awkward. And I thought, well, you know, if I were blind, you know, I could know somebody really, really well and have a really, like, an intimate relationship with that person, and you know, an interpersonal relationship. And if I've never seen their face, to see what their body language looks like, or that, what color their eyes are or whatever, you know, so I feel like we're all kind of blind.
Yeah.
We know each other, but we've never seen each other. So, I don't know, there's a certain amount of... what's the word? I don't know. I'm wandering here in my little pitch, but I wanted people to dig into, take some grains of rice off of the top of their bowl and mail it in to Wayne, so he can go to the credit unit, the post office box, and get those envelopes, but get off of the strike.
Well, yeah, when he gets a chance to get away from the picket line.
Mm-hmm. Jump in the truck and get warm. While he's doing that, he can run to the post office and get the envelopes and get warmed up by our contributions. So, anyway, y'all put some rice in the other bowl. You know, you've got plenty, and if you won't notice it's gone, but they sure would notice it. I bet that Wayne and Bob sure would notice it at the horn if we could get the contributions up. Because we're, what, $1,500 behind this month?
Yeah. You're making me break my vow, Kate. But
I'm sorry. Well, let me just talk then. We're $1,500 under the line for this month, and some thousand something, like we're like looking at $2,000 or $3,000 behind on getting the computers paid for and the bandwidth and everything. And I maybe need to apologize for my line the other day when I closed off my call by saying, "Oh, I have an idea for fundraiser. We can make book on who's going to be the last caller on the horn." And you kind of went, "Thanks for calling."
I wait all night for calls like these.
Yeah, well, if it's any consolation, Kate, I went to the website and subscribed.
Yeah, I saw that, Susan, and God knows we sincerely appreciate it.
I looked at it
this way. I can do without a couple books.
Well, yeah, we've got subscription buttons, Kate, there at the website. You can subscribe.
I'm on one of them.
I know you are. There's rock paper scissors and hammer.
Yeah, I don't know which one I am, but it just seemed easier to do that than try to remember to write a check. But we're, you know, the PayPal thing works for a while, and then we gotta do more because there's not enough of us doing. So I just like to encourage people because we're getting like close to the edge and it's getting real scary, and I just don't know. Someday we're going to log on the computer and it's going to be black.
Boop.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Okay, but I've got two members of the opposite gender on the line with me right now, and I do have to know, you know, diamonds or pearls?
Pearls. I don't like diamonds.
I don't wear either one. I wear one crystal earring and that's it.
Oh, honey, you ought to see my hands. I got rings on almost every finger. I'm a jewelry freak. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't even know how to answer. I would say, don't you have a more intelligent question to ask? What is it? Who wants to know? Why are you seeking that information or something?
Well, you know, fair's fair. I mean, could they not have followed up by asking the men on the stage boxers or briefs?
Yeah,
I wouldn't care about that either. So.
And you know, Joe Biden would invariably answer, you know, thongs, you know, because Biden's Biden. And there's a mental image that I just didn't need coming into the weekend.
God, yes, I really didn't need that. I got to tell you, it's really depressing because all the time I was in high school, I never had as much as one date because I was smart and I refused to hide it. And needless to say, the guys in high school I went to high school with, they couldn't handle that. You know, this was the 60s. Oh. Yeah.
Well, the 60s, 70s, 80s.
To learn, they haven't learned that, learned anything.
And that's the point. 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, now, how about 5,000 B.C.? It hasn't changed.
Yeah. No. Grow up, you idiots!
And it just bores me so terribly. I just don't have time for that kind of stuff. And so one night I made some smart remark in the chat room and logged off, and I thought, oh, dear, that was rude, but I just don't have time for it. I've quit listening even mostly to the serious left, except for Mikey. And he did a wonderful rant about where the puts went, the stocks that were...
Yeah, the options.
United. Mm-hmm, the put options went. I wish I were a member of Nova M because I'd like to replay that program because it was pretty scary. And a man, somebody emailed last night to Malloy and... noted the history of some of the people who were involved in all of this, and it just, I just sat here smiling, thinking, yeah, the dots are all connected. They're all the same people. They're all this global. I don't know who they are, but they've been doing it for decades and decades and decades, and we just have let it happen, and now we're all going, oh no, this can't be happening. What about our civil rights? And, you know, I mean, we could have been paying attention earlier, but. Alas, we didn't. So I just don't have any time for it. All I'm doing is just getting prepared for the ship to all fall apart, and then I can you know, I can go be...
Get about the business of putting the pieces back together?
Yeah, some a magic friend of mine in Montana says, no, honey, you don't get to die. You don't get to die. You have to stick around and teach the boys how to cook.
Well, you know, I do have a story here that might be interesting to you, because I know you're a reader of Atlas Shrugged, Kate. You know how they decide to coin their own money in the book?
Atlas Shrugged?
Yeah. They had their own coinage.
Yeah.
Well, there's proof out there now that these right-wing libertarians they really are. They're modeling their conduct on that book, which is really it's really going to be tough when it comes down to the sex scenes.
The Amerdollar is already being coined.
Well, they got busted. These right wing libertarians got busted in the last day or so. They were minting copper Ron Paul coins.
Oh, good grief.
For legal tender among their own little weird sect.
Well, isn't that known as counterfeiting? Huh? Susan?
She said, isn't that known as counterfeiting? Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but I know that the Amadollar is being coined in copper in Denver. It's already a done deal. The Canadian Mexico American Union.
No, this isn't that. These are right wing weirdos who have decided to make their own money.
Yeah.
And they swear it's backed up by silver currency, but there seems to be a problem in getting them to show the silver.
Well, I know the silver price of silver has gone way up. People who didn't buy in it still buy in silver at $1.43 or it's trouble. Whatever. So, well, it's the top of the hour.
It is news time.
I'll let y'all go. It was nice rocking on the porch tonight. And Susan, you take care. And
blessed be Kate. You have a nice Thanksgiving.
Okay? Please send in any just little bit of rice out of your bowl, so Wayne can read the. Tell him how what you saved to get that money to get, and he can read the. Little letters on the air, like he mentioned the guy that did the popcorn. I thought that was so sweet. So that's all I have to say.
All right.
Good night.
Kate,
good
take
night.
Care. Happy good night, weekend.
Kevin. Good night, Kevin's mama.
Good night, Jane girl.
See y'all later.
All right, later.
Love to Agnes, Bob.
All right, thanks, Susan. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, so... that's the first hour of tonight's Friday Night Front Porch. Whatever is lighting you up is what I want to talk about, because this is not marching orders right-wing radio. We got all the time in the world, and the only thing that matters is you and your ideas. Okay? You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. Or on your nickel, if you've got an unlimited long-distance plan, 304-658-5453. Jump in there. We'll be back after the news. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. It is being called the deadliest storm in more than a decade. In Bangladesh, at least 1,100 people lost their lives, killed by the swath of a powerful cyclone that blasted coastal towns with 150-mile-per-hour winds. Tropical Cyclone Cider wiped out thousands of homes, cut electricity and phone lines, causing 650,000 coastal villagers to flee to shelters. Humanitarian aid is on the way from every corner of the world, including the United States. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans blocking a $50 billion war funding bill that mandated a troop withdrawal from Iraq to begin within 30 days. Democratic leaders say they won't collaborate on another war funding bill until after the first of the year. A lawsuit challenging the Bush administration's warrantless wiretap program cannot go ahead. The unanimous decision by a federal court of appeals said that the government is protected by state secret privilege. A federal appeals court has thrown out the Bush administration's new pollution standards for trucks and SUVs. The court ordered that the new regulations be drawn up, imposing tougher emission standards. Congress has adopted legislation aimed at addressing the subprime mortgage crisis. The bill regulates lenders, reforms the Federal Housing Authority, and provides financial counseling to those facing foreclosure. A similar bill working its way through the Senate. Deputy Secretary of State John Negroponte is in Pakistan with a strong warning to President General Pervez Musharraf, urging him to end the emergency rule, which was imposed earlier this month. Musharraf swore in the interim government earlier today, which will be in place until next month's parliamentary elections. Turkish prosecutors seeking to ban the main pro-Kurdish political party and even throw out some of its elected members from parliament. The pending indictment will include charges of separatism. The president of the former Soviet Republic of Georgia lifting the state of emergency today that was imposed after violent clashes in the capital streets. He insisted everything has returned to normal, claiming that Russia had been behind the civil unrest aimed at bringing down his government. And a group of international election observers has canceled their mission because they say Moscow has refused to issue them a visa on time so they can monitor elections next month. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead, but first this message.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, we must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light. This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The state of California has fined insurer Health Net $1 million. The company admitted it paid bonuses to employees who canceled policies of those who became sick. State investigators say the company lied to them twice about those bonuses. U.S. consumer prices jumping last month due to the biggest rise in gas prices in 5 months. Inflation is expected to worsen in November. Retailer JCPenney posting a 9% drop in quarterly profit based on weak sales in September and October. Shares declined more than 5%. Wisconsin-based Kohl's department store chain announcing a 14% fall in quarterly profit. And for the first time, Starbucks reporting a decline in sales, shares dropping 8%. The world's largest coffee shop chain also announced it was scaling back its plans to expand this year by 100 stores. Japan's Nikkei index plummeting to a 15-month low. Economists say investors are concerned about the yen's advance against the U.S. dollar. Light sweet crude oil trading at $95.10 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $787 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, that's for the week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 67 points at 13,176. NASDAQ up 19 points. The S&P 500 up 8. And there's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Round two. It is, of course, Front Porch Friday. grab a rocking chair. Don't rock on the cat's tail. She doesn't appreciate it. Old Blue likes to be scratched right behind his left ear there. You'll know that he likes it when he doesn't move. Old Blue don't move much. That's the thing. There's a jug in the corner with a corncob stopper in it. Get a swig if you want. Basket of brownies Agnes made earlier today. They're on the rail of the porch. Help yourself. Sit back, relax, cuss and discuss. Whatever you want. Yeah, we got some in a mason jar, too. You can see the peach that's floating down in the bottom of it. Gives the shine a little mellowing, if you know what I mean. So, you know, we make it as comfortable as possible for you here on Front Porch Friday, but everything relies on you. Because if we don't have two or three calls at a time, it's just not that much fun. I think a lot, and Kate got me thinking, what she refers to as the non-election, because I don't think I'm telling tales out of school when I say that Kate doesn't think there's going to be one. And I don't think that's entirely unreasonable. Because I do remember that in, September 2004, the Bush administration began floating contingency plans for delaying the 2004 election. And I think they would have if they hadn't had the fix-in in Ohio. You know, with Kent Blackwell and that whole sleazy crowd. We might have gotten a little something to make it necessary for national security purposes to delay the election. But we are, when Kate talks about the non-election and how it bores her and how she kind of tunes it out and the horse race aspect of it all, I understand precisely what she's talking about. And it leads me to a sort of an inquiry as to the purpose of this network and this program and the other programs on it. If we're talking about the same tired crap that gets talked about on other programs, I would hope that you, being the listening audience, serving as you do as the check upon us, would call in and do as Kate did and say, you know, quit it. Diamonds, pearls, diamonds, schmimons, pearl, schmurls. There are real questions to be answered in the American Republic in 2007. Diamonds or pearls ain't one of them. But there are stories out there that are profoundly underreported that I would hope that from time to time we do find and we do talk about. I'm looking at one of them right now, and I haven't heard that much about it. You know that earlier in the week, the pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout who sits at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue occupying our real estate vetoed the Health and Human Services bill. In other words, that pissant vetoed Head Start. Did you knew, you're informed, you're up to speed, you pay attention, you are wired in, plugged in. You knew what was in that bill. He vetoed Head Start. He vetoed veterans programs. And he claimed that they were full of, they've got too much pork in them. And we tend to think about budgets, because that's the way the Constitution is laid out, we tend to think about budgets coming from the, you know, the Congress up to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, where the chief executive fulfills his function by either vetoing or signing the bills into law. We don't think about the fact so much that they go in the opposite direction, too. That the president feels like he has the right, and this is certainly nothing new with Bush, most all presidents do it now, to put together his impression of what he thinks the budget ought to be. And it is severely underreported, the kind of stuff that goes into them. You want to talk about pork spending? Well, let's take a look at some of the stuff that George Bush has asked for. And I don't mean 6 years ago. I mean recently. Not in the too far distant past, there was a $15.6 billion military and veterans appropriations request from the White House. And in it, as well as in the energy and water spending bill, were some requests from George W. Bush for things that he wanted. What did George W. Bush want? What did George W. Bush want, who is so concerned about too much pork barrel spending? He wanted $24 million. Oh, sit down, everybody. Grab the jug with the corn cob stopper in it and take a big old swaller, because this one will knock you back in your chair. He wanted $24 million for the Laura Bush 21st Century Librarian Program. No, really, I'm not kidding. He earmarked $1 billion for the Reading First program. It was criticized by government auditors for steering contracts to favored companies. Reading First program. I wonder who might be able to make a few bucks off of that. How about Neil Bush, who has an educational software company? Huh? What? Maybe? He wanted $8.9 million for... Oh, gee. Yeah, it's the end of the week, and we had brown beans and cornbread for dinner. And some of this stuff makes it hard to keep it where it's supposed to be. He wanted $8.9 million for the Points of Light Foundation that his daddy started. He wanted $8.9 million of your money. Remember? Do you remember the campaign trail in 2000, him running all over hither, thither, and yonder? It's your money, and I want to give you a tax break. It's your money. Remember that? Well, his daddy, Bailout Bush, set up the Points of Light Foundation. You remember when he said 1,000 points of light? You remember that crap? Well, his daddy set it up, and God knows they're connected to a lot of well-heeled right-wing or pig-licking the donors. And yet they can't come up with enough money to run the Points of Light Foundation. So they need $8.9 million of your money. He can't find his way to sign into law the enabling legislation that keeps Head Start going. But he can, in the same breath, turn around and tell Congress that he wants $8.9 million of your dollars to fund his daddy's pet foundation. He also... never mind. Suffice to say that because George W. Bush is a pig-eared, jug-eyed little lout with the social skills of a banana slug, he is mean, hateful, spiteful, and vindictive. All along you've been wondering how he could possibly veto Head Start and veterans programs and in the same breath say he wanted $471 billion more for the defense budget. You've been wondering that. Well, this is all retaliation for the fact that Congress completely wiped out funding for the Points of Light Foundation and turned down the $24 million for the Laura Bush 21st Century Librarian Program. A very good friend of mine is a 21st Century Librarian. And, I don't see Laura Bush doing him any good. because you can call it, you can call it a Merinos sheep, but, you know, if it has bristles and spines and is real stickly, it's still a porcupine. This is Bush family pork for the Bush family's benefit. But you just don't hear quite so much about that from the likes of Brian Williams and Katie Couric, now do you? Dear God. So, just remember, when you hear this spending stuff, there's more to it than meets the eye. 8.9 million dollars for the Points of Light Foundation and $24 million for the Laura Bush 21st Century Librarian Program. Do Laura Bush 21st Century Librarians, you know, dress in like George Jetson clothes? I don't know. But I'll bet you some Bush somewhere has their hand in the till before the money gets poured into it. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got here?
This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it's Friday. And glad to be there.
Yeah. I wanted to say one little thing about, you know, don't insult the little ants. You call them a piss ant.
Well, that's true. I'm, yeah, going rough on the piss ants.
They're very industrious.
They are. And
I'm sure someday we'll find of valuable use, you know, more, you know, we don't know about yet.
I think you're absolutely right. I'll try to remember that in the future.
I'm kind of serious, you know.
Yeah, I know. No. Comparing, I was rough on the banana slugs too.
Yeah, I like that one. I laughed. I was laughing about that. I hadn't heard about that. Laura Bush Library and the Points of Light thing, I hadn't heard about.
Well, neither had I, and that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the first time I've heard anybody say anything about it.
The Johnny on the Spot Washington Press Corps didn't exactly burn up the airwaves telling us about George Bush wanting $30 million worth of pork.
No.
But then again, if they did that, they'd actually be doing their jobs, doing journalism, which is, after all, hard work.
Well, forget about that.
That's why I got to find out about it over at thinkprogress.org instead, because they actually do work. They, you know, they've got people who sit there and pore over these things and figure out things that journalists would take a century coming up with.
Yeah.
That's what.
Well, I'll tell you, when I really got disgusted with journalism in this country was during the, you know, the 2000. Deal.
Sure.
And we had people like, what's her name? They're supposed to be Democrats. The reporters. The one that her and her husband, her father was a senator, I think. Oh, I know her name. I can see her.
Anyway,
just different ones. And they say, well, Bush is so likable, and nobody likes Gore. I said, well, shoot, I do. You know, and that made me so mad that they would say that. They wouldn't say that they didn't like him. They'd say nobody likes him. Just things like that. Just aggravated
him. Oh, Juanita, I remember the business about how, what was it, George Bush is the kind of guy you could sit down and have a beer with.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm kind of persnickety about the people I sit down and have a beer with.
Oh, boy. He probably wouldn't let me have any. He'd want to offer himself.
That's true, too. But the thing is, I don't trust what happens once he gets a few in him.
Oh, no. Well, I wouldn't trust what he'd put in mine, too. You know, sheesh. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is, only the fact that we're here day in and day out and we see it actually happening
to us. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to ask you about that strike, the nurses' strike. You've been talking about it, and I hadn't said anything about it. And, you know, I'm very unified.
Mm-hmm.
My folks, bless their heart, you know, they went all out for the union, even though they didn't have very good ones. They were always into it.
Well, these union nurses on the line in Kentucky and West Virginia have my complete and unqualified admiration and respect, because
I did see something about it on the internet today that said that, like, it said 600 refused to cross the line, or 300, maybe it's 300.
Well, I know that the vast majority of them are out and staying out.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say, God bless them, you know. My heart goes out to them. And, you know, nurses, to me, nurses are the most, they're like teachers. They're the most underappreciated people.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got a couple more people on the line, Juanita, so let's bring them on for the front porch and see what's going on. Hey, who have I got? Hello?
Hey, can I sit on that porch?
Hey, welcome to it, man.
All right, brother.
What's happening, Wayne?
Well, you know, is Juanita here?
Yeah.
Hi, Wayne.
How you doing, kid?
I'm pretty good. It's cold in Florida.
It's cold in Florida?
Uh-huh.
It's cold in West Virginia, too, darling.
I bet.
We got a little different.
We got 40-something degrees these mornings.
You got any snow yet?
No.
No. We do here in West Virginia. Not much.
Already?
But yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the snow we can handle.
We hardly ever have that in Florida.
No, I know you don't. I've been there once or twice.
Have you?
It's too hot for me, man.
It does get very hot. Uh-huh.
I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. And that's what you got in West Virginia, the middle of the road. Or that's what we've had, anyway. Who the hell knows what it's going to turn into. But
I know.
Where did you see on the internet about the nurses?
I saw a little blurb, you know, like on Yahoo page on their news.
Yeah.
It's from Appalachian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... well, I'm glad to see that's out there. I mean, it's... well, it's a really a bad situation, you know, and, well, I'm deeply involved in the thing.
Are you involved in that?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Probably
more than a lot of the people that pay me.
Well, I'm very much for the unions. I mean, and God bless the nurses. They're wonderful.
The unions,
unsung heroes.
Unions built the middle class in this country. And
one of
the reasons that the middle class is declining is so are unions.
Of course.
But, you know, this situation is, it's not a good situation. It's not a good situation. I talked to the governor's special assistant today, and they were down there. A representative from the governor in West Virginia was down at the negotiating, and there was a representative from the governor-elect in Kentucky, and things went a little better while they were sitting there, but when they left, things turned back to what they were, and it's such a terrible situation, because these nurses and the people that are negotiating for them are not financially or probably even mentally prepared for what these people are throwing at them. For many, many years, these nurses went to the negotiating table.
Yeah.
They sat down with people that they knew, that they dealt with on a local level day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was no big deal. I mean, it was a little give and take on both sides so that everybody could go back and say, well, we got this and we got this, and the company could go back and say, we got this.
Uh-huh.
Now, these same nurses, these same representatives, who are not used to all this legal battering and, you know, all these different things are back there. And now they are confronting not people that they know, not people that they have worked with for years,
uh-huh.
but lawyers who have been hired by the corporation to destroy
yeah.
the union. And,
yeah.
and more than one group. I mean, you have this Yesen and Associates, who's that's their business to destroy unions. Then you have Smith and Smith, a local law firm in Kentucky, whose business yeah. is
You have who in Kentucky?
Pardon me?
You have who in Kentucky?
Smith and Smith. It's a law firm.
Oh, okay.
Anti-union law firm.
Uh-huh.
And this corporation has hired both Yesen, an anti-union and a union busting group, plus
yeah.
they've hired local lawyers, Smith and Smith, mm-hmm. whose object is the same thing.
Yes.
And, you know.
Well, then you
it's
got...
It's a very terrible situation.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it, and I heard Bob talking about it, and I'd been meaning to ask him about it when I had called in, and, you know...
This is nothing short of an attempt to utterly... the Yesen gang and the Smith and Smith or whatever, Wayne... They don't give a hoot who they destroy in this process, as long as they get the company's way, right?
Of course not.
No, these guys would, you know, let me see how politely I could say this.
They'd run over their own grandmothers.
They'd run over their own mother to mm-hmm. get their objection, you know, to do what they were hired to do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's corporate America. It's corporate America
yeah, yeah.
at its best. And, you know, unfortunately, people are not prepared for this. People don't even believe that a corporation would do what these people are doing. And
yeah, until you've experienced something like that, even people just can't believe it.
And the media here in West Virginia and Kentucky are part of, or at least a small part of the problem too, aren't they, Wayne? I mean. Getting out information.
They're owned by the corporation. Bob, this is the same corporation that had you fired.
I know.
Because you told Rocco Massey to bite me.
Ah, God, I got to learn someday.
And I respect you for that. I just wish you would have punched him in the face first.
Well, but at that point in time, I had a list of other people that I wanted to punch
yeah.
first. But
yeah, there's a whole big line.
You know? I have some I want to slap.
Yeah, and well, and I guess I shouldn't even said that because I mean we're not about violence and stuff.
No,
it's just
well, honestly,
it's extremely frustrating, and it's how do you get your message out? You know, and we have a lot of public support, but well, it's just not doing it. We need governors and. Elected representatives. We need people to stand up for the working people and
yeah.
tell these corporations, you know, we're not going to put up with this anymore. You are wrong. An elected official can't just get up like many of them have and say, well, we hope everybody comes together and we could settle this thing and I'm on both sides, and yada, 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 you know.
Yeah, enough with
the biggest side.
Enough with singing Kumbaya. Let's get something
That's
done
exactly
already.
Right. That's exactly right.
I tell you, Juanita Wayne, let's bring one more person into this. We've got Preston calling in from Denver.
Okay.
Hey, Preston.
Hi, Preston.
Hi, Preston.
Hi, everybody.
How you doing?
I'm doing...
Where are you from?
Doing pretty good. I'm in Denver.
Denver.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're not a Denver Broncos fan, are you?
No, actually.
You're a Steelers fan?
This is where you say, yes, I'm a Steelers fan, Preston.
No, I was born in Philadelphia, so I'm an Eagles
oh,
fan.
Oh, you were?
Oh, my God.
And I've also been a big Nebraska Cornhusker fan because I lived in Omaha for a while. And, my mom worked at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and she used to get us season tickets to the Cornhusker games. And that was a lot of fun. But when I moved out to Colorado, some of my friends in college were giving me a hard time, and because the big rivalry between Colorado and Nebraska, and they'd always be rooting against Nebraska, so I started to root against the Broncos in return.
Well,
and we just give each other a hard time about that. And
football, you could root for, or college ball, you could root for whoever you want. When it comes to pro ball, you know, Steelers are the one.
Yeah, we have a Steelers rule on the network here,
yeah.
Preston.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
well,
you're.
That's my first team that I got interested in football is the Steelers.
And Juanita, you even say it right, Steelers.
Yeah.
There's. Preston, you said your mom was in healthcare?
Yeah. She worked at the University of Nebraska Medical Center for a while, and she worked at the university in Philadelphia. She actually worked with C. Everett Koop for a while, and she also traveled to China at one point as a citizen ambassador in healthcare issues. And, just a wonderful, amazing lady. And
what's her profession? I mean, is she a nurse?
No.
What's her
background? She was involved with the records, medical records for a long time, and administration stuff, and liaison work with patients, and working with lawyers, and trying to do mediation, and all kinds of stuff like that. So. Anyway.
There's a lot of things go into healthcare that people never realize.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
For sure. And it would be great if we could have more, you know, access to good healthcare for everybody. And I people are working on it, you know, in spite of all the problems with insurance rates and scams and all that stuff. A lot of people are still able to get treatment somewhere from the wonderful nurses, at least. It was interesting. I was recently in Venezuela for a while, and I met some healthcare practitioners there from Cuba. And Cuba's been sending out, like, they've sent out over 100,000 healthcare ambassadors to other countries around the world, especially impoverished ones. And
they offered to send them to Katrina, too.
There you go.
And, you know, we rejected those, Preston.
Of course.
And somehow I don't get the idea that these healthcare ambassadors are bandaging wounds and saying, oh, and by the way, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains.
Yeah.
You're right.
Let's hope they are. But I don't know. I don't know how much they make some political advocacy. I don't know. It's a good question, or how they might approach that. But anyway, the people I spoke with, fascinating, and actually they were resented. They were rejected by the private industry, healthcare industry in Venezuela, who were like, how dare they come, you know, because they were, you know, they posed a threat to their market to an extent. Although they totally ignored the poor. You know, that wasn't part of their market, so the key
was there.
Well,
the private market is also the for-profit market.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to make money off of your sickness, illness,
right.
Injury.
Right.
That's the most important thing, not your well-being.
And that's the offensive part of it, is the idea of viewing sick people as a market.
Yep.
That's exactly what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a big market.
Yes. Bob, you might know, when did we, well, you know, I don't know, I'm older than you. When, you know, there used to be a time where lawyers and hospitals and doctors and pharmaceutical companies and all those people could not advertise.
Yeah.
When was that changed? During Reagan?
Late 70s, early 80s is when you began to see that sort of stuff.
I mean, you know, it's absolutely disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this hospital change up here, ARH, Appalachian Regional Healthcare, is they're abusing their patients, they're abusing their workers, they're abusing everyone.
And let's remember, and we can't beat on this enough, Wayne, they are a not-for-profit corporation.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. Apparently, not-for-profit corporation. No, I can't, because not-for-profit corporations can apparently put advertisements on the TV.
You know, this might
and the radio
surprise a lot of people, but I have to tell you something. I'm a president of a local carpenters union. I'm a carpenter. And
you're a carpenter?
Yes.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I'm president of the local union here in Beckley, West Virginia. For we found out that, you know, like there would be chains. I don't care, you know, Burger King, clothing chains, all these international chains. They'd come into West Virginia and they'd go to Morgantown, which is it's not the biggest city, but, you know, big city, the university's there and all that. Well, they would build their store union. Then these same chains would come to Beckley, and, I mean, you know, they'd use non-union people, out-of-state people, illegals, whatever. And we're trying to figure out, well, come to find out that the local Chamber of Commerce was telling these chains when they came to Beckley, well, you don't have to worry about the union here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some of my members said, what are we going to do about this? And I said, we're going to join the Chamber of Commerce. And we did. Mm-hmm. And I sit on the Government Affairs Committee of the local Chamber of Commerce. I've had some people that tell me that don't really like me, but do admit that the meetings are far more exciting than they've ever have been. And the other day at a meeting, and you were talking about not-for-profit, Bob?
Yeah.
I asked one of the local, you know, leaders. I said, tell me something, Pete. He said, what's that? I said, what in the hell does not-for-profit mean? And he started to laugh, and he said, I can't tell you. I said, I can't tell you either, but I guarantee you a chamber member came up with that thing. And he'd just start laughing because, I mean, what the hell does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
That means that all the extra money we have, we divide it between the five top people of the country, company,
yeah.
And then we didn't make a profit. That's what it means to me.
It does mean that, and it also means that trying to find out where their money goes and what they do with their money is a vastly more difficult proposition than if they were publicly traded.
Listen, you know, Bob, in the business I'm in, I know I could find out a lot of stuff. Trying to find out people or stuff about these people is damn near impossible.
Look, you're a member of a union, and you're an official in that union, Wayne. The people, and this goes more particularly to the leadership of the nurses' union that's on strike. The cretins who run ARH can go and find out
anything they want about us.
Anything they want to know about that union leadership, right down to the individual members and the money they make.
Listen, I have had my salary published in the local newspaper. I'm not ashamed of it, but you know, I can't find out what their salary is.
No, and you can't find out why it is that they're. You can't go and find out the financial reasons for why they're doing the nurses this way, absent discovery in a lawsuit situation.
Well, exactly, and you know it. Well, they have us in a bind simply because, yes, we may have access to that information, but we don't have the money to pay the people to get it, where they have all the money in the world.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know. It's, it's a terrible and sad thing what they're doing to these, and it's not just the nurses in West Virginia and Kentucky. Nurses in California, New York, Illinois, Las Vegas, all over the country are under attack.
Yeah.
They are under attack.
they're the civilian, they're the low men on the totem pole, like our soldiers, and you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, that's exactly right. There's no, you know, well, it's, you know.
Well, we were, look.
All this perpetuates from Washington, D.C., and the attitudes of the neocons, and, you know.
Well, remember, you know, how long ago was it that the Kentucky River decision came down from the NLRB, Wayne, that said that if a registered nurse asks an LPN to go and change and empty the garbage in room 17B, that suddenly she's a supervisor and is no longer she no longer has access to union protection.
That's about a year old. That's, you know, a little over a year old.
Yeah, this is the administration.
And that comes from George Bush's National Labor Relations Board.
Precisely, and it's that same the same Department of Labor that at one point tried to classify a pimply-faced 19-year-old kid flipping a burger at McDonald's as an industrial producer.
Yeah. A manufacturing job.
Which means he's not eligible for time and a half.
Right.
The Bush administration doesn't change any laws. They just clarify them.
Yeah, we've been clarified to death. You were going to say something, Preston?
Clarified to death.
Yeah. I noticed that John Edwards, a few months ago, spoke on the picket line of the Smithfield strikers.
Yeah.
Tar Heel, North Carolina, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bob and I met representatives from them in. Well, we've run into them a couple places. One was Washington, D.C., but, hell, that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
A little over a year. Yeah. Have you read up on that, Preston? Do you know what goes on there at Tar Heel?
Not lately. I used to get these great updates on that from a radio host named Jackie Guerra. Really interesting person. But, you know, she was being funded by a union organization or something, and they just ran out of money, they said, anyway. And the show disappeared. You know, it was subsidized.
Right.
So much of the right wing is doing. It's interesting. The right wing is subsidizing a lot more of Spanish versions of, say, a Sean Hannity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've read a little bit about that, Preston. Again, they're doing it on terrestrial radio.
They're ready.
Yeah.
Because they're determined to consolidate their stranglehold on the public airwaves. You know, that's why we wound up where we are. I mean, Wayne and I joke about when I got canned from the terrestrial radio station, but it was a very real thing. At one point in time, there were counting Dr. Bill and me together. There were 5 hours of liberal programming on this little radio station in Beckley, West Virginia, and frankly, the right-wing community would not tolerate it. And I was canned for my remarks in regard to the nurses, the first nurses' strike. It wasn't even a strike, actually. It was just an informational picket. And then, in turn, they ran Dr. Bill off, and now it's just a happy little right-wing wonderland, isn't it, Wayne?
Oh, my God.
Jeez, that's
a
shame.
I expect for Hannity to get a job there pretty soon.
Well, if they could afford him, they'd run him.
They would run him.
Yeah,
I think now to me he is scum.
He is.
That's all I can say is he is scum.
And there's another one too. That Tucker Carlson. Oh my God. How could his mother can't love him? Can she?
Well,
what a vile human being.
Go ahead, Preston.
Well, I think they're also working on a lot of, on top of the terrestrial radio, I think doing a lot of internet stuff too. I don't know if you've come across much of it, but I'm not very familiar with it, but they do have internet streaming, you know, these gathering of sorts, and they're a mix. Even Tucker Carlson I'll give him credit for this. He interviewed Amy Goodman one time. And, you know, it was challenging, but, you know, he was civilized. You know, he was fair. And, but I understand how he can be very manipulative and deceitful as well. And it kind of makes, you know, makes your soul sick. I mean, basically that people, your fellow Americans, consciously are deceiving us on so many issues. It can be really just disheartening.
Well, Preston, where's the cutoff? I mean, you said our fellow Americans, and that's the way I was raised to think, too. Where is the cutoff where you finally say, you know, these people share no commonality of interest with me whatsoever?
I don't know. I always try to find, and I do, inadvertently, I always find some point at which there can be a connection, even with the worst. Sean Hannity, I mean, he sat down with a lot of his work. It's repulsive. But he did sit down with Janine Garofalo and, you know, kind of said hello. And I don't know. He used to actually, it was interesting, about 3 years ago, he used to interview a lawyer for Palestinians and their struggle to free themselves from the oppression of this occupation. And this guy was razor sharp, and Hannity would get a lot of grief for having him on. They'd be like, why do you let that guy on? He's crazy, or he's this, or don't give him any time. Don't let him speak, because he's tearing it up. But he did it several times, and I'll give him credit for that. And I think he's just receiving more pressure, and so that's kind of faded away. I also saw a similar thing with Michael Medved, and he used to regularly have very radical authors on, people like Robert Jensen, and very interesting debates they'd have. Again, I think, you know, a lot of what he's using, his arguments, they come right from the apartheid government in South Africa, or worse governments than that. But still, it's good to see, it was good to see that exchange, and that really withered away over the past year or so, and his callers became much more critical as well.
Well, they're downright strident, and I think part of that change is that Hannity sees himself as being within striking distance of displacing Rush as number one.
Exactly. He folded to the money.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, you know, what's more important, you know, than the world than Hannity? I mean, to himself.
Oh, I know. When the guy talks about John Edwards' haircut,
what did he used to do? Deliver pizzas or something? No, he was the gas station attendant.
Among other things, yeah, he worked his way from.
Which there's nothing wrong. You know, work is an honorable thing, but you know.
Yeah.
I don't care what kind of work it is, but, you know, where the hell did this guy come from?
Well, among other things, he spent some time working in radio in Huntsville, Alabama. That I know.
And he actually lost one of his jobs, I think, in Utah. People were upset. They're angered by what he was doing. And so they, you know, said, we're done with it. So that was interesting. You know, actually, Venezuela got a lot of heat recently for they say censoring a radio station or revoking its license, but it didn't renew a license of a commercial station there, one that's very much like Fox here. And it was.
I think my phone has died.
No, you're still there.
You're still with us, Juanita.
Don't go away.
I think my phone has died.
No, you're there, Juanita. You're there, dear.
It's like I can barely hear you for about 15 minutes.
Okay, well,
I'll try to be louder, I guess. But.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just, my phone is crazy, and it too.
Well, if you leave, we thank you for being here.
And have a wonderful weekend, Juanita.
Thank you, and, go. Nurses go.
Thank you, Juanita. Take care, dear.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night, y'all.
Bye.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye. That's the curse of the battery phone, you know? But no, that's the question. You know, there's a dynamic tension between what we consider to be free speech rights versus the commercial. Is there any question? I mean, there's no free speech on terrestrial airwaves in the United States, is there?
It has its moments. It does. You know, certainly we're very fortunate to have Air America. And, you know, is it completely free? No. And there are limitations and, you know, and it's very fragile. You know, financially, it's this constant on the brink.
And that's what I mean about free speech, Preston. Yeah. All of this stuff is commercially driven, and if you look behind the curtain, and you find, and you know, far be it from me to, well, you know, but
to
it's
look behind the curtain.
Yeah, it's driven not by content, and I've tried to describe it from time to time, and I don't know if it gets across or not. Advertisers don't care so much about content, at least where national advertisers are concerned. They care about numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Or that seems to be the case as long as it's right-wing radio. Because it doesn't matter what Rush says. It doesn't matter what kind of hateful filth Michael Savage spews. You know, he said he wanted to blow away lesbians the other day on radio stations that were heard all around the country.
Savage?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Just made vile comments. You know,
yeah, another prince among men.
Yeah, they'll keep cutting his check, Preston.
Right.
Because whatever gold bond medicated powder, they may not be them, but whoever's advertising doesn't care as long as the numbers get delivered. That's
I think it's a mix. I think there are those who are just looking at numbers. I think there are also those that. We simply want to support it financially, and even if they're not having much success selling something, they'll still help it out financially. There's a lot of people sinking their money into this stuff from the business community to help the ideology along, but at the same time, I think it even goes beyond that. I think there are sometimes people running ads where within the advertisement itself. There's a very subtle messaging of ideology going on, sometimes not so subtle, but almost always coalescing with the ideology of the right.
Well,
the authoritarian
exactly
government.
What they're doing. I mean, they're fascist. The corporation is more important than the people.
And the profit margin of the corporation is more important
than... Well, I mean, you know, that guides all. You know, the hell with rights and union people and...
But, Preston, it's the delivery of human beings, you know, potential purchasers, as a commodity is what I'm getting at when I say that there's no such thing as free speech. Because you can't have free speech unless you can deliver the numbers of people who are demographically proven by focus groups... to be willing to buy your herbal baldness cure.
Yeah.
Don't forget them mattresses.
Yeah, Swedish mattresses, vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls. You know, it goes on. Buy gold now.
Yeah. And, it's interesting.
If it was about consumer choice, for instance, and of course this is a different medium, but look at cable TV. I've seen a burgeoning little movement for what's called a la carte cable. Have you seen that, Preston?
I've heard of it. Yeah. So you don't have to buy the whole package or something like that.
You pick the channels you want.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, our buddy David in Tennessee had called in one night. He said, listen, I've got 3 electric Jesuses and 2 home shopping channels. That's 5 channels out of the 12 that he gets.
Right. That's too bad. That's awful.
They changed my cable system here. Wayne, you and I are on the same company. I don't know if they did it to you or not, but they changed my cable system here. I no longer get MSNBC, CNN, CNBC, or headline news.
Olbermann?
I don't get Olbermann anymore. I also don't get the Sci-Fi Channel. I don't get the Food Network, and I don't get Comedy Central. I do, however, get 4 channels of Electric Jesus, 5 of Home Shopping, And the only
and
the only 24-hour news outlet remaining to me is Fox.
Now, suddenly did that to you?
Yeah.
They haven't done it to me yet, but I'll...
Well, but then again, Wayne, you, if unless I'm mistaken, you because of the needs in your house, you've got, like, the whole package anyway.
No, I mean, I don't have HBO and all that junk. But, you know, I mean, the same, I mean, I got suddenly, well, they do my computer, they do the TV, they, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a reason they do that stuff, yeah. Preston.
Well, that's a real informational tyranny, you know, that you're experiencing intensely, and that we all do.
I mean, look, I don't mean to be too geeky about it, but I can imagine what the demographics of the Food Network are like, because I know foodies.
Yeah,
I don't know a lot of right-wing chefs or right-wing wait staff. Most of the people who work in those, I mean, that's a tough profession, and most of those people are pretty liberal. I've found the people who are into that level of detail and things that they talk about, you know, the exotic foods or locally produced foods, things like that. The pork and beans conservatives don't give a rat's rear end about it. So, boom, that's gone. Science fiction? The Sci-Fi Channel? The Hannity listeners aren't watching the Sci-Fi Channel. And the most striking thing out of all of it is that I am left with nothing but Fox.
When did that happen?
Which company are you with?
They're called Suddenlink.
Okay. Well, I just got satellite TV myself just a couple weeks ago, and I get my phone through Quest, and then my internet, and the same thing with, you know, the caller was saying, bundling thing, whatever. And I was very skeptical at getting it. It's called DirecTV.
Mm-hmm.
And
owned by Fox.
Okay. But, and there's a lot of junk, a lot of shopping stuff, and, yeah. Not very good preachers, but I must say there's a couple channels that I've been really just thrilled to discover. One called Link Television, Link TV.
Link TV is cool.
Yeah, and they're bringing, you know, news and views from all over the world, and bringing a lot of difficult material for sure, but in a thoughtful and respectful way. Doing a lot of, you know, music from the other parts of the world and so forth, rehumanizing our neighbors on this planet, and documentaries, and also the Sundance Channel.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
What's that? Do you have that one? Do either of you have that?
No, I've had it in the past. It seems that most of the people who have Sundance are people who have satellite.
Yeah, and beyond that, have the disposable income to, you know, get the right package to be able to get that channel.
Oh, right, because you get in on the ground floor, you don't get near. No, you've got to be dropping the hundred bucks a month to get all the really cool stuff.
Yeah. I'm spending about half that.
But see, what I'm getting at, Preston, about the ideology behind it. If I had a la carte cable, I would never buy the Electric Jesuses. I don't give a hoot about the home shopping networks. I don't want Fox. I don't want Fox, the Fox network. You know, I can come up with a whole list of stuff that I don't want.
Yeah.
And my ability to tune in what I want and have it there and get rid of the garbage is at direct odds with the cable company's need to not to deliver product to me or you, but to deliver us as a commodity to advertisers.
Yeah. Speaking of advertising, do you know about that internet advertising, the like banner ads or something like that? And I've noticed their advertisement for their service, and when I go to different progressive blogs, you'll say advertise liberally.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I'm not sure if that's tied in with blog ads or if that's.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's that. Blog ads basically has channels, And so you buy, you know, when you're buying when you're buying ads on a website, you buy, you know, you can say, I want to buy across the spectrum at liberal blog ads, or I want to buy across the spectrum at conservative blog ads, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was wondering, have you considered that?
Oh, we're on with them.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
We're with Google Ads and blog ads both. I think we need to go and relook at our rate card because okay. we are ridiculously cheap. Now, yeah, because see, and again, you know, some of this is inside baseball, so I don't necessarily want to. I'd have to say, well, okay, there goes the front porch on Fridays. Because that's why a lot of terrestrial radio, talk radio, is modeled around the, you know, hi, you know, Preston's calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, what's up? And you talk for 30 seconds, and I say, that's great. Enough about you. Let's talk about me. Hey, I'm wonderful, and we'll be back after this break. And nothing gets discussed. Nothing gets delved into because, again, it comes back to what I guess I'm beating on tonight. It is not about delivering programs to listeners. It is about delivering listeners as commodities to corporate sponsors.
Yeah, there's short gaps between ads. It really startles, like, European people or others who come here and they're not accustomed to that kind of pacing. You know, they do some interesting things. They've got their public efforts, but even their commercial efforts, like in Sweden and other places, they'll put like the ads at the front or the end of a radio show or a TV show and leave you in peace with what you're attending to. And so...
You know, Wayne, you're a sports junkie. You may have heard the guy in Charleston or somewhere along the way. There's a sports talk guy, and he's one of the bigger ones in the country. He's delivered by Premier Radio Networks, and his name's Jim Rome. And
let me interrupt here. I got a call coming in.
Okay.
It may be a nurse, and I got to hear what's going on there.
Okay, well, that's cool. We'll
let
talk.
Me bail out.
All right. Talk to you later, Wayne.
Thanks for the conversation.
Our pleasure, my friend. Our pleasure.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye. But, Preston, what I. Okay, we'll have to wait and because I've forgotten which button you're on, and I don't want to hang up on you, Preston.
Okay.
Oh no, Wayne, you're still there.
Yeah, how did I do that?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I missed the phone call.
All right. Well,
you know me and buttons, Bob.
Oh, dude, you know me and buttons. I got too many of them here, but Jim Rome always says when he takes a call, and this is indicative of how the commercial format is driven. He'll tell a new caller, and this is a quote, have a take and don't suck.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, there's another one.
That makes me want to get on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that ridiculing stuff. And the concision thing, it's so tough, too, because, I mean, you know, a few sentences, it's difficult, and these very kind of nuanced issues, it's very easy to kind of come off not making a lot.
And see, it's easy to get away with that in a right-wing format, Preston, because most of right-wing radio is, well, megadiddos from Busted Knuckle Rush, I don't know why them dang Democrats won't support our troops. And there's no, you know, it's what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California. There's no there there.
Yeah.
Okay. There's
my cell phone. I gotta go.
All right. See you. See you, Wayne.
All right, bye.
But it does work. I mean, I mentioned the Cargill example and you know the problems with that. But I was watching Sundance over the past couple of weeks, off and on, and they had this segment called the Big Green or something like that. Something green. Or big ideas for a green planet, maybe. Anyway, very interesting news show on all these environmental initiatives going on around the country. And it was sponsored by Lexus, you know, which, you know.
Yeah.
It's a part of the problem in a way, but.
Yeah, so, solutions to your problems brought to you by the problem.
In fact, here locally, we have an Air America station, and they had Walmart as an advertiser, and we have a local host, Jay Marvin. He's doing a lot of interesting work. And he was getting a lot of heat, and the station was getting a lot of heat from progressives for doing that Walmart ad. And again, I can understand people's concern, and in a way it does seem counter to the, you know, the vision of progressive radio. But at the same time, I think it only becomes a true problem when it limits people's speech.
There are two approaches to things like proactive environmentalism, Preston. One says that we've got to do it all by the grassroots, that it's all got to be small time, and that any time corporate America gets involved with it, it demonizes the process. The other way, and this was a news story from a couple of weeks ago, Bill Clinton has gotten in bed with Walmart.
Was on the board of directors for a while.
Right, and he's gotten back in there with them on an initiative to get them to aggressively stock and aggressively merchandise green resources for business and consumers. You know, from the compact, not just compact fluorescents, but other stuff as well.
Yeah. An environmentalist recently joined Walmart to do the same sort of stuff. And he has mentioned how much grief he's gotten. You know, everyone's hurling sellout at him and stuff like that. You're being co-opted and so forth. And again, I mean, there's always room for criticism, and I'm sure their efforts are going to be flawed and limited and all that. But I think to dismiss it out of hand is so problematic. And like in the case of Jay Marvin, you know, he's losing support from people and the station, and I don't know, it's just, we need more solidarity.
Well, there is that old saw out there, Preston, about don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
There you go. Yeah, I've heard that puts it well.
And there's well. Truth in that, but we've got to be judicious in our use of it.
Yeah.
I for one believe that the world will get serious about greenness. The world will get serious about our oil dependence when corporate America gets serious about it. I can tell you with 100% certainty, Preston, you know, we've been talking about health care, America will have universal health care when corporate America realizes that it is good for its bottom line for us to have universal health care. I mean, all you got to do is look at the Toyota plants that chose to locate in Canada instead of the U.S., for one reason, health care. Because Canadian health care is taken care of, so that gets factored out of the pay scale and the cost per automobile equation for Toyota in Canada. But the mathematics remain, and the accounting mumbo-jumbo remains if they build the plants in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
But some of this is also about the corporate leadership disconnect. They're comfortable. You know, I don't think that legally John Edwards could take away Congress's health care, like he says in that ad that we've run a couple of times.
It's interesting. Even in the industry like the oil industry, there are conflicts of ideology. I mean, they're mostly on the same page, obviously, but Ross Gelbstein wrote a book about global warming, and in it he talks about how, I think it was executives at British Petroleum thought the executives at Exxon were doing some very unscrupulous things in the media, and they did think, they conceded that there are real climate issues that should be acted upon, and there was a lot of greenwashing going on, certainly, but there was some authenticity to it. I mean, at least the words were more accurate. A little bit more honest, but you noticed, of course, that clean coal, so-called clean coal, sponsored the Democrat debate. Bob?
Yeah, I'm here. I was listening to what you said, but at the same time, I got to admit, Preston, I was trying to line up our next our next entries onto the front porch.
All your time, but
no, you're not. You're not. This is you call once a month. I got time. Okay. Don't ever apologize, please, because, I mean, like, I gotta, I got an email from our listener, Jeb, here. And Jeb says, you have such intelligent guests, and I cannot speak quickly. He says, I do send you my best wishes every other month. He says, I never did have cable TV. My faucet's leaking, and sunrise comes early. Got to go. But, you know, that's a fundamental philosophy behind what's going on here with the horn, Preston, is that, you know, I can cozy up and pretend that I'm best buddies with some politician, which I ain't, and they're a guest on the program. Or I can have conversations with some of the smartest people in America who are out there working every blessed day and carrying America on their backs and learn a lot more from them than from somebody who's trying to hustle a book or hustle a vote. And I think we're all a lot better for it. And that's one of the maybe it doesn't seem like we're doing anything that spectacularly different here, but the underlying philosophy absolutely is.
Yeah. You know, when I mentioned the blog ads before and was wondering if you were connected with them, I understand that you're part of their, you know, people can buy an ad on your site. I was also wondering if you'd considered you buying an ad for Head On Radio and informing...
Oh, gosh, we have. We have, but...
Is it too pricey?
It varies from site to site. I have periodically bought ads here and there. Most of them are per view charges.
Okay.
The other side of that is also that, you know, we've we literally operate on the last frayed thread of a worn out shoestring on an old pair of Chuck Taylors. Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't leave a lot of room for luxuries like advertising, although advertising should not be a luxury. We're building, you know, we just got done, you know, we don't go out and buy a highfalutin computer. Peter and I build them.
Great.
Because that way we know we're getting what we know will work. But by the same token, we also know that, that we're maximizing contributors' contributions. You know, I don't think there'll ever come a day when I'm Creflo Dollar trying to explain that I have $69 million a year, but I make it all from my real estate investments, and none of it comes from the church. And we've also got David from Maine on the line with us. You there, David?
Yes, I am.
Hey, David.
Hey, Preston, how you doing?
Doing okay.
That's cool. You were talking about getting your network to properly function and get the right funding. Well, personally, I think one of the things that I noticed that I think you should take into consideration is you probably do need some kind of like a Cliff Notes show if you can get some maybe some people from Head On can do it, to edit a proper kind of like highlights. Because I know a lot of people say they love to listen to 3 hours of radio a day, but the reality is the time that we live in right now, people get distracted so easily.
Oh, we have the collective national attention span of a squirrel on acid.
Right. So what I was thinking was, you know, if there are some people on Head On, I don't know how I would.
Well, you know, David, that's great, because I've got a list of stuff I want to do if the funding ever comes through. Marketing, public relations. I mean, frankly, I would put Mark Levine or Guy James or anybody else, Dr. Bill, up against any talking head pundit that you can find on TV right now. I got to have a public relations person to make those hookups.
Have you sent any bulletins to Crooks and Liars ever? Have they ever put you
on your site? Yeah. One of the things down the road, fully funded operations, there is a person who is an in-house promotions person who does exactly what you were talking about, David. They listen to every show. They pull clips. They pull the absolute best out of it.
Yeah.
And they throw that stuff together.
I wasn't talking necessarily about that. What I was talking about was have crooks and liars. Like, when I noticed when you did the thing with Warren Zevon's former wife or ex-wife or widow, what have you, I would think that crooks and liars would have been interested in that a little bit, primarily because of the music club that they do. Like the music club thing. So I would
some of that, David, is our ability to get it done.
Yeah.
Which is nothing but pure excuse making on my part.
I'm sure you have a full plate.
There's not a lot of me left after hour 16 or 17, Preston. I got to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
The other part of that is getting them to pay attention. The blogosphere, and I'm not being ugly. I'm really, really not. The blogosphere is, for all of its new media aspirations, has a lot of old media habits. And one of those is, what have you done for me lately? What are you going to do to raise my readership? There's a negative aspect to it of, are you out there trying to raise money, and are you going to take money away from what I'm already making?
Yep, that's huge.
It is dog eat dog, David.
Yeah.
You know, the favorite whipping boy, I guess, because it's the number one thing, is Daily Kos. Daily Kos charges $9,000 an ad.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
Yeah. And, you know, if you can get that, okay, but at least like a sliding scale, I mean, some allowances for different circumstances, so it's not so class-based and concentrated money-based, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But what you said about the competition and the fight for funding dollars and subscribers and all that, and the fear of losing them to some other project, and, yeah, people are just beating each other over the head.
Oh, I can open my email right now, Preston, and I can call up four separate websites that have sent out a plea for donations today.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of Amnesty International, but it's like I've been getting the same letter from them for like 3 years. It's like they use this template, and it's like, I regret to inform you, this is an urgent time. This is what I heard 3 years ago.
Preston, I love the stuff that you're mentioning, and David, you as well, because these are things that I couldn't think of and would not have the ego to talk about without you sort of giving me the prompting. And that is, you know, in our discussion of terrestrial radio, Preston, I said that we are tied up, and it's been my theory all along, that liberal progressive talk radio, or what we call conversation radio, cannot succeed on the right-wing business model. And again, that's those mattresses, the Swedish mattresses, the vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls, the herbal erection medicine, and the baldness cures. That's all of that. And yet, it's what you see replicated in the attempt to make talk left-wing talk radio go. Well, it applies in the blogosphere as well, and it applies to liberal causes, too. Amnesty International didn't come up with that letter on their own. You know where that letter comes from?
No.
That entire fundraising strategy was pioneered by a huckster named Rex Humbard Jr.,
okay,
who employed a man whose name I can't remember, but he built the perfect fundraising letter and made a multimillionaire out of Rex Humbard, and then he turned his efforts to Oral Roberts and made a multimillionaire out of him.
Okay.
All and you know, please don't kid yourself and think that there's anything left-wing about a televangelist. Every one of these models has its genesis in the right wing. And rather than being left-wing and looking at it and saying, is there another way? Can we do this some other way?
Can we utilize all this paper and mailing in a better way?
Right.
Helpful way towards the cause and connect people?
We have instead said, looks like it works for them, ought to work for us.
And I guess it does. I don't know. I don't know. I'm ignorant on this. I admit that. But beyond the money-making aspects, there's the informational aspects that we could, you know, to this sort of project. And, you know, group, you know, mutual assistance with other groups. And I don't know. In fact, with one mailing recently,
but that mutual,
a nickel.
That mutual assistance, Preston, if anybody translates that into, I'm expected to give you some of my money, thanks
our
for
share,
playing.
Or share my mailing list with you?
Yeah.
No way.
Ain't gonna happen because, yeah, they paid out big bucks in the on the front end. You know, you if you respond to one email letter... if you respond to one email letter from one cause, suddenly, and I know this to be a fact because it happened to me, respond to one thing from the DNC, next thing you know, you're getting spam from Ted Kennedy, you're getting it from Nancy Pelosi, you're getting it from Dianne Feinstein, James Carville, Paul Begala.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
you know, not that I object to their message.
Yeah. I...
But there's only so many hours a day I've got to read spam.
Right.
Yeah.
That template of the mailing fundraiser we were talking about, I remember, I think 60 Minutes did a program on their techniques and what sort of results they get and what they're shooting for results-wise. And sometimes they only need like a 3% response. You know, but that in and of itself, I mean...
Look,
it's okay for making money, but as far as
I did telemarketing, okay?
Yeah.
And if I made 600 calls and made 20 sales, you know what I was?
What was that?
I was the big dog.
Okay. Okay.
The success margin is tiny, but the payout is huge. Let's see. I got more blinking lights. I think this is Luke. You there, Luke?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome aboard.
Hey.
Preston's here with us, and David from Maine is here with us.
Hi guys. So,
hey, Luke.
So we've got Denver, Colorado, somewhere in the wilds of Maine, and Knoxville, Tennessee, so far.
Yeah, cool.
Well, I was hearing you talk a minute ago, and I heard the story this evening where they're fighting for the administration is going to fight this thing where the federal judges said that, you know, about the SUVs and things being listed as trucks where they're wanting to do the mileage. You were talking a while ago about, you know, about until the corporations get behind it, and the judge said, you know, said you can't mark these things as, you know, as off-road vehicles and trucks, and like SUVs, there's 70% of these are never see off the road.
They're never going to see these dirt on the tires.
Yeah, I mean, just like I said, these are cars. You know what I mean? They're big cars, but they're cars. And these people say, well, we can't get to that mileage because they're trucks. It's like, no, they're not.
But a lot of them are built on truck frames, so that's how they get away with it.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where you hear the person from the industry, well, we've already got our carbon things on the drawing board through 2012. It's like, well, guess what? Get more paper, you get to draw new ones up.
And eventually we're going to come to that. You know, the...
Yeah, I mean, like I say, they're going to be drug kicking and screaming, but they'll do it.
The Toyota Highlander is not on a Toyota truck frame; it's on a Camry frame.
But you, yeah, I mean, it's one of these things. You know, like I say, they can make the vehicles that way; they just don't want to because they know the price is going to go up. But at the same time, you know, it's like the election right now. You know, they tell people, you know, we want hybrid cars; we want, you know, all these different things, and they go, no, you don't. No.
Look at Chrysler.
We know you won't.
Look at Chrysler. Gas prices had already hit $2.50, $2.75 a gallon, and what did they introduce? They introduced the new Dodge Charger. Seating for four, relatively small automobile, with a 300 cubic inch V8 Hemi head engine in it.
Like, I don't know about you, but we don't do much drag racing here, not as a group.
I can't afford the tires to.
I know.
I mean, I remember when I was young, young and stupid, and I just loved laying down rubber with the family station wagon that had the 440 Magnum 4-barrel in it.
Well, I mean, when we were young, you know, say you hear somebody drive down there, you hear somebody peeling out, you see a Firebird or a Mustang, you go, yeah! Now you look at it and you go, damn stupid fool.
Well, and Dad looks at me and goes, I tell you what, you get to buy the next set of tires out of your radio station paycheck if you want to keep burning rubber. And well, you know what? I got real sane real quick.
Well, you know, it's like this thing right now. I don't know how it's going to wind up, but I tell you what, I'm at the point now, it's like they've said, you know, 75% of the people say they want the war over. You know what? So now, if the Congress will just say, we're not going to send any more bills to our side of the world.
Well, and that's apparently that's what they said today, that they won't send another funding bill for the military to George Bush's desk until next year. Of course, that kind of reminded me, guys. When you were in elementary school, you know, it was real cute when you were getting out for Christmas holidays, and the teacher would say, see you next year. And you're young and you're kind of, what, huh? And then you realize, oh, yeah, it'll be next year when I come back. You know, that's kind of a fraud. On the other hand, there's another underreported news story that you probably heard about because, you know, you guys are plugged in. Did you see what happened with the impeachment numbers in the last poll?
No, actually.
How much did they go up?
53% of the American people now favor the impeachment of Bush.
Wow. Oh, one other thing. I don't know if they finally pulled this off, but did you see where one thing they decided was, I'm not sure how they were arranging this, if one or two people were going to stay in town, but they were going to keep one or two, somebody was supposed to stay in the house or something so that George Bush can't make any recess appointments?
Yeah, and you know, good on Harry Reid. It's nice once in a while. You know, that
I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but it was something where they were saying like something like somebody was going to essentially stay in the house so that they could say the house was not out.
Because
the minute they say that, you know, that it's out,
you don't recess and you hand the gavel off to the one guy and the one guy hands off the gavel to the next senator and the next senator and the next senator. Everybody does a day for the good of the country.
Yeah. And the next day you come in, and I go home, and you just sit for 24 hours, and we'll try it again, you know. Because like they said if they do it, said that he's just going to start packing the courts and stuff with recess appointments, you know, and everything, you know, as fast as he can. So like I said, people are saying, you know, that the Congress is afraid of it. It's like, you know, guys, it's time to just tighten up your belts, and like I say, just say, we've sent you a bill. You said no. When you want to find that bill, you come back and talk to us. Yes. Otherwise, we're going to go do work on something else for a while.
Yeah. Preston, go ahead.
This so-called war on terror, the swindle, the money swindle aspects of it aren't going to make the SNL ripoff look kind of mild.
Haven't they already?
Yeah. I think Tom Hartman said, $2 trillion. It was $1 trillion, but now it's $2 trillion. That's gone missing from the Pentagon. They don't know what happened to it.
You know, they've got a big, big couch there, Preston. and you know, they've got and the pockets on the general's uniforms are those kind that don't hold money real well. So when they sit down, it all falls out into down under the cushions of that big couch in the Pentagon. We could literally shake out the sofas in the Pentagon and come up with enough money to fund universal health care and have money left over for Head Start and full day kindergarten. I heard that one idea put forward last night. I forget who said it. Maybe it was Biden who said, you know, we need 16 years of public education. He said that's 2 years earlier and then guaranteed 2 years of college.
Okay.
Hear.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe we should insist that the Pentagon start using those foreign letters to raise funds for themselves. And
yeah, make the Pentagon have a bake sale once in a while.
Well, you know, it's like I say, what they got to start doing is like getting into Head Start on the 2 years before, and maybe on that 2 years at the end, you know, get like AmeriCorps or something in on it. You know, or, you know, we'll send you there for 2 years, and you're going to work for the country for 2 years doing something like that. You know, doing some public project.
Yeah, that would be great. Or how about Peace Corps option? You know, that was, again, a different sort of diplomacy instead of all this war making. Peace through diplomacy. But they hate the very concept of
Well, that's why it's important to make a man like Dennis Kucinich a laughingstock.
Yeah.
Because he said it last night, you know, his policy of strength through peace, which just turns the entire establishment mindset on its head. Not peace through strength, strength through peace. And it makes perfectly good sense if you sit down and think about it.
Yeah.
If you apply human rights as a function of national security, then national security gets a whale of a lot easier.
Yep.
Then this is no-brainer stuff for you and me.
Yeah, but again, that would cut into the markets, the weapons markets.
I'm sure you remember Dr. Strangelove, the sign outside of Burpelson Air Force Base, you know, where crazy General Jack D. Ripper has just started World War III. This is Burpelson Air Force Base, peace is our profession.
Okay.
No, it isn't. War and death, bloody, horrible death, is the profession.
Right.
Let's see. We've got, I believe, Richard from California there. Hey, Richard, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Glad to have you aboard. So we got David, we got Preston, Richard, and Luke. Got a full plate now.
Hello, Preston. Hello, Luke.
Hi.
Hey, Richard. Where are you at?
I live just outside of Richmond, California.
Okay.
Richmond is about three cities north of Berkeley.
Okay. Did you get much smoke? Are you too far from that, or did you get smoke from those fires?
Well, I'm in Northern California.
Oh, too far.
The fires were all down south of L.A.
Actually, we got smoke from those fires here in Denver.
Wow.
There was a noticeable haze, and they mentioned it on the news that the fires were the cause.
So you're in Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David's off in Maine. You haven't gone quiet on us, have you, David?
No, I haven't. Just listening.
What okay.
City are you in, David?
What is that?
What city are you in? Are you undisclosed?
I care not.
Okay, fair enough. I have a friend who lives in Augusta, and he's doing an amazing media project himself called Radio Free Maine. And it's not like a show like what Bob does, but what he's been doing for the past couple decades is attending lectures, a lot of them at universities, MIT, Boston, University of Maine, and at churches and union halls, too, and doing a lot of taping of people like Howard Zinn and Francis Fox Piven, Chomsky, and other people like that. Yeah.
You know, I'm laughing is I'm just thinking about Howard Zinn. He's a funny guy.
He has a great sense of humor, for
he
sure.
He has a great sense of humor, and so does... who's the fellow with the Italian name?
Michael Parenti?
Yeah, Michael Parenti. And it's so such a pleasure to listen to them speak.
I agree.
I think that we need to have a sense of humor on our side, not just irony. I think we need some good laughs.
Yeah. Michael Moore, actually, I was going to mention something he did. We were talking about those form letters that get sent out sometimes, and I think it was Michael Moore who was something like, he started a fake grassroots advocacy fund, something like Satanists for Dick Cheney or something like that, and they did up this mock newsletter or form letter to raise funds with, and they mailed it out and actually got some responses.
Well, that's like what I wanted to do, and Agnes stopped me from doing it back during the 2004 election when George Bush came to Beckley. I wanted to get a bunch of buddies together and put sheets on and just stand by the side of the road with signs that said Klansmen for Bush.
I like that. I really do.
But Agnes was afraid that we'd get followers.
There you go.
Well, you know, I really think that, unfortunately, we need to learn from nasty people like Karl Rove. We need to go on the attack against their side
I understand that, and that was part of what I think we were talking about earlier, Richard, is there's a difference between learning from them and simply co-opting everything they do.
You're right, yeah.
Now, we have, and frankly, it's a non-issue for me, and I don't want people thinking I'm attacking, you know, and yada, 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 no. But we are now officially playing this, we're playing the Rovian game as Democrats with the media and with individual campaigns. Planted questions are disingenuous at the very least.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true.
You know, all of these campaign organizations, whether it's Obama's or Clinton's or Dodd's or Biden's or Dennis's or Richardson's, Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney saying, hey, let's put on a debate, okay? You know, we can use Daddy's barn. It's a very real negotiated process.
Every
one of those campaigns had to have been informed in advance that CNN was going to vet every single question that came out of that audience. Okay, there's no way that they weren't informed. If they say they weren't informed, they are lying to you.
I'm wondering, do you think the YouTube debate was more freeform, or
no? It wasn't, Preston.
Okay.
The single most offered question was not asked. Question number one was not asked, and question number one was, "When are you people going to impeach this little punk?"
Yeah. By the way, I put out what I said a little wrong. I didn't mean about using Rove's really slimy, underhanded techniques. But what I mean is going on the attack against the Republican people when they deserve it.
Well, you know, the thing of it is the problem with these debates have been, why are you all attacking each other? Let's start attacking Giuliani. Let's start attacking Romney. Let's start attacking McCain. Show me how well you're going to take them on. I'm tired of you taking each other on.
Well, there's truth in that, Luke, but by the same token, is it not fair game to ask someone why they are taking money from the pharmaceutical industry?
Sure it is. But I mean, it's just I'm tired of it. That's all they're doing. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't know what a percentage of it would be. And I mean, they're right to ask those questions, but at the same time, I want to hear them start putting the Republicans on the defensive.
Well, God knows the Republicans have been doing it. You know, you remember that smarmy comment? Who was it? Mike Huckabee, maybe? No, or Mitt Romney? You know, one of those slugs. They're all the same to me. Who accused Democrats of spending money, quote, like John Edwards at a beauty parlor?
Mm. Well, just you heard the chimp in chief the other day with his comment about the Democrats spending. I'm sitting there going, you've been playing with a credit card for 6 years like you would never see a bill.
Yeah, it's monopoly money, and he went, yeah, right.
I mean, that would impress me more if one of the Democratic debates, one of them would pull out his wallet or whatever and take out their credit card and say, look, when I make a payment with a purchase with this, I have to pay for it.
And frankly, if they never mentioned...
The bills are coming due.
Yeah, and look, if they never mentioned George Bush again in one of these debates, it would be fine by me, because you know what? He ain't running.
Yeah.
Unless the other shoe drops and, you know, we find out that we've got maximum dictator for life Bush.
I was so glad to hear Dennis Kucinich in one of his replies make a mention of Yucca Mountain.
Yeah.
Where they've sunk. I don't think that was part of a question. That would surprise me, but I think he just interjected it. And it's a big issue that a lot of people don't know about, and I think would be appalled if they did, that we dug out this sacred site of Native Americans and stuck all this, or planned to stick all this poison in it for generations to come.
And see, that was also used as the excuse by CNN for making that young woman ask her diamonds or pearls question. Well, we've already talked about Yucca Mountain. You can't ask the Yucca Mountain question, young lady. Ask about diamonds or pearls.
Well, it's like you wanted to turn around and say, okay, then that means you can't ask any more questions about immigration for the rest of the night, right? But you got to ask your question about the driver's license. Right. So you can't ask any more questions about immigration, can you, Mr.
Right.
Flipper?
Good point. That's interesting. And Obama, I admire him in a lot of ways. Even on the right, on a personal level, these people can be perfectly nice people, okay, in many ways, neurotic in a lot of ways, like ourselves. I think sometimes we see our neurotic parts in ourselves, but it's the institutional pressures that are getting, like Obama is getting a lot of money from nuclear power industry, and Illinois already has more nuclear power plants than any other state, and they're okay with it. And how much critical information is he receiving? He's getting all this money. He's getting all his lobbyists and their advocates for this stuff coming at him, making this somewhat accurate argument about how it reduces greenhouse gases. But, it's more complicated than that.
At what cost?
Right. The production of uranium takes a lot of energy, and then the waste that's left over. But the sick thing is, on top of putting it in these sacred sites like Yucca Mountain, they're making weapons out of it. These depleted
Where exactly is Yucca Mountain? I can't find it in my map software. I was just
okay. I tell you what, guys. I need someone to be a volunteer. We can only do four calls at a time. We've got a new caller on the line, and I need someone to.
Bob, I'll go ahead.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Luke, have a great weekend.
All right, you too, bud.
Thanks a lot. And let's see, is it Vandy or is it, it's Vandy this week, isn't it?
It's Vandy this week. Let's see, if everything falls right, if we can work it all the way down, we may be able to sneak your guys at West Virginia back into the end of the race.
That could be fun.
Number two.
Yeah, Oregon. Last night. Yeah, I don't want to offend the Oregon listeners, but Oregon did me a big favor last night.
I believe it's Nevada, by the way, Yucca Mountain.
Literally.
I'll see you.
Yeah, it is in Nevada, guys.
We're in Nevada.
It's not that far from Vegas.
Ah.
I mean, that's why it's a big issue for Las Vegas folks.
And you'll see, I think the governor and the mayors around there, a lot of them Republicans, are dead set against this. And they've heard all the arguments about what an economic boon, create this wonderful market again. These are not free markets.
These are captive markets. The free market is a fraud in large part. We have Don with us now from Ohio. You there, Don?
Yes, I am.
How Welcome aboard. Welcome to the front porch.
Thank you. I've been listening to your show during the past week, and I decided to call in this evening.
Well, great. Glad you did.
I myself am a talk show host.
Oh, wonderful.
And a journalist. I write for the Idaho Observer.
Okay, so you do the hard work of journalism as opposed to standing in front of a camera and then going out for martinis.
Yes, that's correct. And I'm a truth seeker, too. So
wonderful.
We'll get that straight.
So did I get it wrong? I thought you said Ohio. You're in Idaho?
No, I'm in Ohio, but I write for the Idaho Observer.
Okay. Just trying to stay straight here. It gets a little confusing sometimes.
If I have the floor, I will say a couple of things.
Go ahead.
Number one, I'm in agreement with what everyone is saying. What I notice, and I speak not just on my own show, and I have major guests, people like G. Edward Griffin, for example,
mm-hmm.
Well-known authors, researchers, and I'm on a lot of Patriot networks as a guest talking about issues that just do not make the mainstream media. One is the current embezzlement of trillions of dollars from our U.S. Treasury. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with Ambassador Leo Wanta.
No, you've thrown a new one onto the table.
Okay, well, I'll try to be as brief as possible. Back in the early 1980s, up through the middle 1980s, when President Reagan was in office, he issued, a presidential order number 12333, which created the possibility that an intelligence agent, say someone working for the U.S. Treasury or the CIA or the FBI, could open up a business and put the proceeds in offshore accounts with the intention of repatriating those funds into the U.S. Treasury. The specific for creating that presidential order was to allow Leo Wanta, who was a Treasury agent, FBI agent, and working for the CIA, and Reagan's most trusted intelligence agent, the privilege of buying rubles with $150 billion of startup capital, which he repaid to the U.S. Treasury, by the way. He bought discount rubles and resold them on the market to the tune of $27.5 trillion. That's with a T. Now, he operated his company, which he named Ameritrust Group, Inc., group with an E, by the way, on the end, which is an important distinction, because Bush 41, in finding out about this, made threats, actually had Wanta's Chinese business partner murdered, poisoned within 10 days after this extortion visit, which went unsuccessful. And then they lured Wanta into Switzerland under the pretext of arresting Mark Rich, anyone who's familiar with Bill Clinton's last pardon.
Sure.
Yeah.
Was an arms, drug, and oil dealer by the name of Mark Rich, real name Hans Brandt. And Mark Rich supposedly was on his way to Switzerland, but was tipped off by Mossad agents to go elsewhere, and they arrested Leo Wanta, threw him in the Swiss gulag for 134 days, where he survived several attempts on his life, poisoning and what have you, beatings. They extradited him to New York. Now, by this time, he was an ambassador from Somalia. He actually had authority to make investments for Somalia, and he had $18 billion of high-value treasury notes in his briefcase. Judge Alice Ross in the federal court in New York asked why an ambassador from Somalia to Switzerland and Canada was in her court. As he began to explain why, and explain why he had this $18 billion in his briefcase, the prosecution, which was being conducted by the federal government, moved to have the case dismissed, and Wanta was ushered out of the court to be arrested on the courthouse steps and extradited to Wisconsin, where phony tax charges were brought against him. This was orchestrated by Bill Clinton with the aid of the FBI and the Wisconsin state tax authorities, and he was aided by Tommy Thompson, or this was aided by Tommy Thompson and Donna Shalala, both who eventually became secretaries of Health and Human Services.
Wow, but
now
that's a bunch of information to digest in a short period of time.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time staying with that.
Well, I'm almost to the end. Wanta spent 8 years in a gulag in Oklahoma, again, being tortured, beaten, drugged, everything you can imagine. They tried to have him declared insane to silence him while they began raiding these accounts. Now, they could be
Bill, is that Bill?
Don.
Don,
has anybody talked with this guy?
Oh, yes. This is currently going on. This is the whole problem behind what we are facing in the United States right now. This is the whole problem with the housing market. This is the whole problem with the derivatives and hedge funds. This was the reason why they staged 9/11 to cover up.
But, I mean, this guy that's been jerking around, has anybody been talking with him? Like, have you talked with him?
I've communicated with him and his treasury. A vice president, Michael C. Cottrell, and this is the key, Christopher Story, who is a world-renowned geo-financial expert who has been publishing financial reports in various publications for the past 38 years. He's in London, England. And in fact, I had 3 email communications with him today.
Cool. I guess my key question is, has anybody interviewed any of these people, and get them on the air live?
Oh yes. They've been interviewed. Right now, it's at a different state. Right now, we have a provost marshal running our country. and this is being kept out of the media, we have a Provost Marshal, Brigadier General Rodney L. Johnson, is running the government, investigating. They have arrested over 3,000 bankers and extradited them to London and Frankfurt to face international charges.
Now, when you say,
what have you.
When you say running the country, what do you mean?
Well, he is, by law, the U.S. Supreme Court some months ago gave the authority to this man who normally would be the CID for the Army. In other words, he would be the chief investigator for any criminal activity in the military. He has been given the authority by the U.S. Supreme Court under the protection, under the umbrella of the World Court, and they are financing this investigation and this extradition and arrest of all these bankers. If you notice how many times they've changed hats in the Treasury, at Goldman Sachs, at Citibank, they just had one just within the last week.
Was that Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch?
And Morgan Stanley's involved in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bank of America was the initial party. The Federal Reserve is involved, the Treasury. Paulson was arrested last December 23rd in Germany. Brought back to Ford's funeral under a $350 million security contract. And he's still been...
For breaking in, let me tell you this, where my confusion lies. I'll have to tell him real fast.
Well, I tell you what, I think we're going to have to carry this over for another front porch because I'm slap out of time, guys.
Okay. Right.
Sorry to take up all the time.
Oh, no, that's okay. This is it's just there's a level of depth here and dots that I don't think we can do in 20 minutes or maybe an hour.
Let me give you my web address.
Do please.
Then you could read up on it. Go to web, leave out the www, by the way,
okay.
web.mac.mac.com/Don, D-O-N, Nikoloff, N-I-C-O-L-O-F-F.
Okay, I will go and have a read, and I imagine that many, many other people will as well, Don.
Yes.
Is that .com?
It's under articles and archives. You can find the article.
Okay, and that's... web.mac.com/Don Nikoloff.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Don, thank you for ringing in, joining us on the front porch. I genuinely do appreciate it, and I thank you for. I got a weekend's worth of homework ahead of me now.
Thanks for the opportunity, and I'll get back to you again.
Okay, take care. Preston and David and Richard. Sorry, time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
It was good catching up with you all again.
And don't be such a stranger, Preston. We worry when we don't hear from family members.
Yeah, I'll be in touch.
All right, take care, guys.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, I have to say that this is the most successful front porch that we have had thus far. You make me think that there's hope for it. So I hope you'll we'll do this all again this coming Friday. In the meantime, have a wonderful weekend. Join us, please. Make sure and join us Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, for the first running of Night Sounds with Billy Shears. By the way, there will not be a Sowards report this week because our good friend Matt Sowards is on the road to the Young Democrats fall meeting in New Hampshire. And I'm sure he'll have a lot to talk about next weekend. Also, be aware that you'll have a new edition of Rick's Place coming up this weekend as well with our good friend, horn psychologist, Rick Goodner. Up next, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential with your host, Peter Godbold. There's no Foxed Up and no Cup of Joe. Well, I'm not sure if there's a Cup of Joe this evening or not. We'll find out, won't we? Thanks to everybody in every way that you contribute, in every way that you participate, in every way that you support, in every way that you seek, and in every way that you keep the ideas of the American Republic and the American dialogue and concepts of democracy in the 21st century alive. And always, always, always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans blocked a $50 billion war funding bill that mandated a troop withdrawal from Iraq to begin within 30 days. Democratic leaders say they won't collaborate on another war funding bill until after the first of the year. Congress left for a two-week Thanksgiving recess today without passing any of the major bills they were working on before leaving. A lawsuit challenging the Bush administration's warrantless wiretap program cannot go ahead. The unanimous decision by a federal court of appeals said that the government is protected by state secrets privilege. A federal appeals court throwing out the Bush administration's new pollution standards for trucks and SUVs. The court ordered that new regulations be drawn up, imposing tougher emission standards. Protesters marched to the U.S. Justice Department today to call attention to enforcement of hate crimes, in particular the Jenna 6 case. Busloads of people crowded into a downtown plaza in Washington, D.C. to protest criminal charges brought against six black teens accused of beating a white high school student in Jenna, Louisiana. Turkish prosecutors seeking to ban the main pro-Kurdish political party and even throw out some of its elected members from parliament. The pending indictment will include charges of separatism. A group of international election observers canceling their mission because, they say, Moscow has refused to issue them a visa on time so that they can monitor Russia's parliamentary elections next month. The country's top election official denies those charges. The prime ministers of North and South